I think, said the pallid man with the mustache, his voice unexpectedly confident, that we should now hear from Miss Taggart. He leaned forward with a look of hopeful craftiness. As Dagny did not answer, but merely turned to him, he asked, What do you have to say, Miss Taggart?
Nothing.
I beg your pardon?
All I had to say was contained in the report which Jim has read to you. She spoke quietly, her voice clear and flat.
But you did not make any recommendations.
I have none to make.
But after all, as our operating vice president, you have a vital interest in the policies of this railroad.
I have no authority over the policies of this railroad.
Oh, but we are anxious to consider your opinion.
I have no opinions.
Miss Taggart, he said, in the smoothly formal tone of an order, you cannot fail to realize that our branch lines are running at a disastrous deficit, and that we expect you to make them pay.
How?
I don't know. That is your job, not ours.
I have stated in my report the reasons why that is now impossible. If there are facts which I have overlooked, please name them.
Oh, I wouldn't know. We expect you to find some way to make it possible. Our job is only to see that the stockholders get a fair profit. It's up to you to deliver. You would want us to think that you're unable to do the job, and
I am unable to do it. The man opened his mouth, but found nothing else to say. He looked at her in bewilderment, wondering why the formula had failed.
Miss Taggart, asked the man with the green muffler, did you imply in your report that the situation of the Rio Norte line was critical?
I stated that it was hopeless.
Then what action do you propose?
I propose nothing.
Aren't you evading a responsibility?
What is it that you think you're doing? She spoke evenly, addressing them all. Are you counting on my not saying that the responsibility is yours? That it was your goddamn policies that brought us where we are? Well, I'm saying it.
Miss Taggart, Miss Taggart, said the chairman in a tone of pleading reproach. There shouldn't be any hard feelings among us. Does it matter now who was to blame? We don't want to quarrel over past mistakes. We must all pull together as a team to carry our railroad through this desperate emergency.
A gray-haired man of patrician bearing, who had remained silent throughout the session, with a look of the quietly bitter knowledge that the entire performance was futile, glanced at Dagny in a way which would have been sympathy, had he still felt a remnant of hope. He said, raising his voice just enough to betray a note of controlled indignation,
Mr. Chairman, if it is practical solutions that we are considering, I should like to suggest that we discuss the limitation placed upon the length and speed of our trains. Of any single practice, that is the most disastrous one. Its repeal would not solve all of our problems, but it would be an enormous relief. With the desperate shortage of motive power and the appalling shortage of fuel, it is criminal insanity to send an engine out on the road with 60 cars when it could pull 100, and to take 4 days on a run which could be made in 3. I suggest that we compute the number of shippers we have ruined and the districts we have destroyed through the failure, shortages, and delays in transportation. And then we
don't think of it, Mr. Weatherby cut in snappily. Don't try dreaming about any repeals. We wouldn't consider it. We wouldn't even consider listening to any talk on the subject.
Mr. Chairman, the gray-haired man asked quietly, shall I continue?
The chairman spread out his hands with a smooth smile indicating helplessness.
It would be impractical, he answered. I think we'd better confine the discussion to the status of the Rio Norte line, snapped James Taggart.
There was a long silence. The man with the green muffler turned to Dagny.
Miss Taggart, he asked sadly and cautiously, would you say that if, this is just a hypothetical question, if the equipment now in use on the Rio Norte line were made available, it would fill the needs of our transcontinental mainline traffic?
It would help.
The rail of the Rio Norte line, said the pallid man with the mustache, is unmatched anywhere in the country and could not now be purchased at any price. We have 300 miles of track, which means, well, over 400 miles of rail of pure Reardon metal in that line. Would you say, Miss Taggart, that we cannot afford to waste that superlative rail on a branch that carries no major traffic any longer?
That is for you to judge.
Let me put it this way. Would it be of value if that rail were made available for our mainline track, which is in such urgent need of repair?
It would help.
Miss Taggart, asked the man with the quavering voice, would you say that there are any shippers of consequence left on the Rio Norte line?
There's Ted Nielsen of Nielsen Motors. No one else.
Would you say that the operating costs of the Rio Norte line could be used to relieve the financial strain on the rest of the system?
It would help.
Then as our operating vice president?
He stopped. She waited, looking at him. He said,
Well?
What was your question?
I meant to say, that is, well, as our operating vice president, don't you have certain conclusions to draw?
She stood up. She looked at the faces around the table. Gentlemen, she said, I do not know by what sort of self-fraud you expect to feel that if it's I who name the decision you intend to make, it will be I who will bear the responsibility for it. Perhaps you believe that if my voice delivers the final blow, it will make me the murderer involved, since you know that this is the last act of a long, drawn-out murder. I cannot conceive what it is you think you can accomplish by a pretense of this kind, and I will not help you to stage it. The final blow will be delivered by you, as were all the others.
She turned to go. The chairman half rose, asking helplessly, But, Miss Taggart,
please remain seated. Please continue the discussion, and take the vote in which I shall have no voice. I shall abstain from voting. I'll stand by if you wish me to, but only as an employee. I will not pretend to be anything else.
She turned away once more, but it was the voice of the gray-haired man that stopped her. Miss Taggart, this is not an official question. It is only my personal curiosity. But would you tell me your view of the future of the Taggart Transcontinental System?
She answered, looking at him in understanding, her voice gentler. I have stopped thinking of a future or of a railroad system. I intend to continue running trains so long as it is still possible to run them. I don't think that it will be much longer.
She walked away from the table to the window, to stand aside and let them continue without her. She looked at the city. Jim had obtained the permit which allowed them the use of electric power to the top of the Taggart building. From the height of the room, the city looked like a flattened remnant, with but a few rare, lonely streaks of lighted glass still rising through the darkness to the sky. She did not listen to the voices of the men behind her. She did not know for how long the broken snatches of their struggle kept rolling past her, the sounds that nudged and prodded one another, trying to edge back and leave someone pushed forward. A struggle not to assert one's own will, but to squeeze an assertion from some unwilling victim. A battle in which the decision was to be pronounced not by the winner, but by the loser.
It seems to me,
it is, I think,
it must in my opinion,
if we were to suppose,
I'm merely suggesting,
I'm not implying, but
if we consider both sides, it is, in my opinion, indubitable.
It seems to me to be an unmistakable fact.
She did not know whose voice it was, but she heard it when the voice pronounced, and therefore I move that the John Galt line be closed. Something, she thought, had made him call the line by its right name. You had to bear it, too, generations ago. It was just as hard for you, just as bad, but you did not let it stop you. Was it really as bad as this, as ugly? Never mind. It's different forms, but it's only pain. And you were not stopped by pain, not by whatever kind it was that you had to bear. You were not stopped. You did not give in to it. You faced it, and this is the kind I have to face. You fought, and I will have to. You did it. I will try. She heard in her own mind the quiet intensity of the words of dedication, and it was some time before she realized that she was speaking to Nat Taggart. The next voice she heard was Mr. Weatherby's.
Wait a minute, boys. Do you happen to remember that you need to obtain permission before you can close a branch line?
Good God, Clem!
Taggart's cry was open panic.
Surely there's not going to be any trouble about...
I wouldn't be too sure of it. Don't forget that you're a public service, and you're expected to provide transportation, whether you make money or not.
But you know that it's impossible.
Well, that's fine for you. That solves your problem if you close that line. But what will it do to us? Leaving a whole state like Colorado practically without transportation. What sort of public sentiment will it arouse? Now, of course, if you gave Wesley something in return to balance it, if you granted the union's wage raises,
I can't. I gave my word to the National Alliance.
Your word? Well, suit yourself. We wouldn't want to force the Alliance. We much prefer to have things happen voluntarily. But these are difficult times, and it's hard telling what's liable to happen. With everybody going broke and the tax receipts falling, we might. Fact being that we hold well over 50% of the Taggart bonds, we might be compelled to call for the payment of railroad bonds within 6 months.
What?
Screamed Taggart. Or sooner.
But you can't. Oh, God, you can't. It was understood that the moratorium was for 5 years. It was a contract, an obligation. We were counting on it.
An obligation? Aren't you old-fashioned, Jim? There aren't any obligations except the necessity of the moment. The original owners of those bonds were counting on their payments, too.